So welcome back, listeners, to this episode of Sports Spill, where once again it is time for our feature interview. And today I'm delighted to once again be joined by a work colleague and professional hockey player, Catherine Lane. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Hi, how are you? I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. So I guess the first question I've got for you is, you're here for a reason, and that reason is you've been selected to play in the Vitality Hockey Women's World Cup this summer. First of all, congratulations. How are you? How did you feel when you found out?
Thanks. Really excited, quite shocked. Yeah, we're just absolutely buzzing. Absolutely can't wait. It's just a really exciting time.
And you said that you were quite shocked. You've been picked for the Commonwealth Games, so you were in the most recent squad, but was it still a bit of a surprise to you?
Yeah, I think selection for the Commonwealth was a massive, massive surprise for me. Obviously, that was my first senior tournament, so I always knew that I was going to be very much borderline for World Cup, even though I had gone to the Commonwealth Games. And still, the kind of few weeks running up to it, wasn't really sure where I was at. But yeah, obviously really happy to be in the squad.
So you had no idea, no real clues or hints had been given that you'd be picked, or was it very ambiguous?
Obviously you have your reviews and you have feedback, but there were a couple of us that were kind of, all of us were competing for one spot, so it was quite competitive. So no clues.
And where were you when the email came through? What were you doing at the time?
I was doing some master's work, so very exciting. Hadn't been able to concentrate all day. So I think it was just more of a relief, really. We'd played two games against Ireland on Thursday and Friday, but then selection didn't come out until the Monday after. So pretty long weekend. Just tried to keep myself as busy as possible Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But unfortunately, with uni work, I was kind of having to sit at a desk and type away. So it wasn't the most ideal.
And we're sitting here now. Obviously, when this episode is released, you will have it will be public knowledge that you've been selected. But for the moment, it's very much in-house, very internal. How has it been not being able to tell people what the outcome is? Have you had people asking you?
Yeah, I had a few. Luckily for me, most of my friends from home have absolutely no idea about hockey. Like, most of them don't even know, one, what the World Cup is, and two, that it's even going on in London this summer. So they just know that I play hockey for a job, but don't really have any idea what's going on. I don't think they really knew it was my job until I went to the Commonwealth Games. So actually, from my friend's point of view, that's absolutely fine. I've obviously told my close family, and I think it's actually harder for my mum not to tell people than for me. So I think that's probably been the biggest challenge, actually.
And you say that the people don't know that you played, or didn't know you played hockey until the World Cup. To me, that just sounds a bit absurd, the Commonwealth Games. To me, that sounds ridiculous, because if I had a friend who was a professional athlete, I'd be raving about it. But is it still a case of that hockey is still quite a minority thing, and maybe people don't realise that you are full-time athletes?
Yeah, I think so. I went to a very normal school in Derby where hockey, we did really well at hockey just because of the local hockey club, Belp Hockey Club, and they kind of raised us, but our school wasn't really that great. So my friends from school are all off doing their own successful things. Like, I'm in the most intelligent friendship group. They're all doctors, lawyers, vets, or just kind of doing all these exciting things, and then I just hit a ball around for a living. So I think they're all just so busy, and we stay in touch really regularly, and they're all so supportive when I tell them that I've been selected for things, but like, they don't really understand that you can kind of play it for a job, I think, because they're kind of more into like football, rugby, things like that, and it's just a bit of a different scale, really.
I take it, though, after the Commonwealth Games, especially with you being on TV, they know a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. Bless them. They kind of follow the stream and they're watching. And I'll get this like running commentary via WhatsApp. Like, what number are you? I think you're number three. I can't tell if it's you or not. Kind of going on, which is quite funny to read after the games. You come back and kind of get another debrief from a non-hockey perspective, which is quite funny. But no, they're all really supportive.
I think it's fair to say as well that it's been a whirlwind few months for you. So you started 2018 with just one senior cap, and now here you are, a Commonwealth bronze medalist, going to play in a home World Cup in front of thousands of supporting fans. Did you ever think the first few months of this year would pan out quite like this?
Absolutely not. My review at the start of the year, was told wasn't going to Commonwealth Games, probably not going to World Cup. So I'd kind of focused this year on just like keeping my position in the squad, just working really hard on everything that I could improve on, and kind of hitting October time when Champions Trophy comes around, kind of hitting that hard and almost resetting. But yeah, and then Commonwealth Games obviously came completely out of the blue, and I just had the best time. And it almost kind of set off like a hunger for more, because I'd never experienced anything like that before. And it was just so much fun, and kind of managed to have an all right tournament performance wise, which has obviously led into the World Cup. So yeah, really unexpected, but wouldn't change it for the world. I've absolutely loved it.
So that review that you mentioned, what did you do anything specific to change it afterwards, or was it just a case of getting your head down and just working even harder, or was there something that you specifically targeted to improve?
I think almost all the pressure was off, because I thought I wasn't going, so I was like, okay, I've got absolutely nothing to lose, so just go and train, have fun, enjoy it. I mean, you get paid to do your hobby. What can be better, really? So yeah, it was just like, let's go and enjoy it, enjoy training. And somehow taking all that pressure off helped me perform better, and kind of was playing at my best, and that's what happened, really.
And you mentioned that Commonwealth Games experience was like no other before. Was it like no other in terms of the play, and you know, playing against international teams, or was it the camaraderie with your teammates and spending time with, you know, other teams as part of Team England, or was it just a mixture of all of those things?
I think everything. Obviously, I'd only had one senior cap before that, so obviously just playing at an international level was incredible. Getting to know a lot of my own teammates a lot better, because some people, you train together every day, but you might be on a different bench to them, and we always sit in the same benches, so they might be in the other dugout, or you just don't really see them that much because you come in, you train, you go home for lunch, and you don't really hang out that much, whereas obviously being in Australia for 3 weeks together, you get to know people a lot better, which I think that was really great for me as well. And the camaraderie in Team England. I think I found myself in a lift at one point with Adam Jamili, one of the Brownlee brothers, and then two of the Rugby Sevens guys. And I was just kind of standing there like, this is a bit surreal. I remember texting my mum, like, just been in a lift with Adam Jamili and Alistair Brownlee. And she was like, oh my God, did you get a selfie? And just things like this, which, yeah, just obviously a lot of the other girls weren't fazed by it at all. And as soon as we walked in the flat next to us was Max Whitlock. Kind of, it said names on the doors. And I just went into absolute fangirl mode. And Maddie was there like, calm down. Like, you need to stop being such a fangirl. But yeah.
And the hockey itself, stepping out onto the pitch for the first time, singing a national anthem, how was that?
Well, we didn't sing the national anthem until the semi, or the no sorry the third fourth playoff, no, and it was Jerusalem, which I didn't know the words to.
No.
so a lot of us had to learn the words, so but that was pretty cool. But stepping out for the first game was incredible. It was the biggest crowd that I've played in front of before, and yeah, just to take it all in. The biggest piece of advice, because our psychologist had said to me before, like, speak to some of the girls about their advice for playing in front of big crowds and things. I spoke to Mads and Joe Hunter, and they were like, just take it all in before. Don't let the first time you experience it, when you're walking out for the first time, and then suddenly it kind of hits you. So yeah, just kind of went out while the game before us was playing and just took it all in.
And the games itself, I hope you don't mind me saying, but it didn't quite go from all your way in the opening group games. There was a couple of results which weren't expected, but then you came back and you hit back really hard. I thought the girls played really well in the semis against New Zealand, were unlucky to go out on the shootout, and then going and smashing India in the bronze medal game. That turnaround, how encouraging was that for you, that you managed to, you know, get those bad performances off your back and push forward and play the hockey we all know you can play?
Yeah, it was really encouraging. I think teams like India are, like, they can be such banana skins almost, so they'll just play so differently to what we're used to, kind of the European style, and they'll just do something and go and score, and you're all just kind of stood there like, oh, how did that happen? But they do have some very skillful players, and you have to respect that. But yeah, being able to turn it round against New Zealand, it was a really positive performance. And yeah, like you said, obviously was really devastating to go out on a shootout. But then to come back in that third, fourth playoff, the kind of the last 10 minutes to go was just such an amazing feeling, because we were just kind of looking at each other like, we've got this. But yeah, it was just incredible.
Certainly made worth staying up until 4 in the morning covering it back home. So one thing we've seen a lot, you do a lot more of, especially since the Commonwealth Games, is you've appeared in a lot more of our media stuff. We obviously like you, we rate you as a media person. One thing that I really enjoyed was the bake-off you did with Colin Murray, and I just wondered how that felt, because I know when I met Colin Murray, I was a bit trying quite hard not to fangirl, and was that pretty cool, you know, finding yourself in the kitchen with Colin Murray?
Yeah, it was. Completely honest, I wasn't quite aware of how big time he was. I remember speaking to my dad the night before. He was like, I think you should just Google and really check that you know who Colin Murray is. So I did, and then kind of realised, like, okay, need to clean the kitchen here. So he was scrubbing the oven the night before. But no, that was so much fun. He's so laid back, and literally it just felt like you were in your kitchen with your mates. Which was pretty cool. Obviously sad to have come last place.
I was going
to
say, did you think that result was justified?
Well, Colin actually messaged me on Twitter after the video came out saying, watching that back, I think you were robbed. So I've asked him for a rematch.
And obviously the behind every great player stuff as well. Fantastic campaign. And filming that with your mum, that must have been quite a fun experience.
Yeah, bless her. She was quite nervous coming down, because obviously she's never really done anything like that. And it went over because we ended up doing, you know, the drone shot at the end with mm-hmm. the car. We literally drove around Bisham Abbey, I think, about 12 times, just driving around in circles. So, mum charged her petrol to hang the donkey. But no, she absolutely loved it. And it was incredible to kind of share your stories that you've had with your family growing up and actually share them with the outer world and actually kind of appreciate. It makes you appreciate how much your parents and your family have done for you. And obviously you know it, and we just forget to say thank you, as I think a lot of kids do. But I think this campaign has had so much support. Like, so many people have messaged me about this campaign going, like, this is incredible, or like, you've reduced me to tears, or like, your mum's a legend, just things like this. And it's great to see how much backing the campaign's actually had.
And you say people messaging you there saying they've reduced, or you've reduced them to tears. I will admit, didn't quite get me to that level, but your video in particular, I don't know why, because as any listeners to this will know, I'm quite an emotionless person. I don't cry at anything. But watching yours, it was the moment you talked about the bad review and you were talking about how you felt like you let your parents out. For me, that just struck a chord, and it just made me think, like you say, how influential are parents, not just in the good times, but also the bad times as well. And was your mum someone you sort of went to when you had that bad review and sort of was a shoulder to cry on?
Yeah, massively. I got a bit upset when we were just repeating that story in the car. I was like trying to hold it together. But yeah, I just remember FaceTiming them like in floods of tears, just kind of, yeah, just feeling like you'd let them down, because obviously they've done so much for you. And because I'm from such a hockey family, everyone is absolutely loving it because they all love hockey so much and they think it's great what I'm doing. So it's kind of almost like if you had to leave and go and do like a normal job, you'd feel like you were kind of letting them down. Like, kind of, I think my parents have had access to tournaments and things. So my under-21 World Cup was in Chile, obviously the Commonwealth Games in Australia, and they would never travel to those places if I wasn't there. So it's almost allowed them to experience new parts of the world as well. So I think that's been one of the biggest things for me, and I didn't want that to stop for them.
And you say you come from a hockey family. Is that, were your parents both hockey players, and have you just sort of followed on in their footsteps?
Yeah, my parents met playing hockey. My grandma was president of the hockey club. My cousins, aunts, uncles, literally everyone. We used to have this, at Belpocular, we used to have this like family Easter tournament, and we've got a lane 11. Like, we had enough to make a full team. There's an old photo somewhere, which is hilarious. But yeah, literally the whole family plays.
And I know the system has obviously changed a lot in the last few years and it's become more centralised and stuff, but were you always thinking, growing up, I'm going to play hockey for England, or is it something that has just sort of come about because through hard work?
I never really thought it was a possibility. I never thought I was good enough to do it. Probably not even until the last year of under-21s, so my final year of uni, But even then, I was applying to grad schemes. I started a grad scheme after uni, and after 6 weeks, absolutely hated it. And luckily, senior trials came out that week. So it was a very good excuse to leave that and start on this journey instead. But yeah, I've always worked hard, and I'm lucky that I've always kind of worked my way up through the system. So I've always had the next thing to aim for. So yeah, it is a load of hard work. It's a lot of sacrifice in that kind of even from like 15, 16, you're leaving GCSE parties at 11 p.m. because you've got a hockey game the next day and your dad's picking you up just as the party's getting good. Just things like that that people don't really realise go into it. Yeah, but lots of hard work. But yeah, I didn't really realise that it could even be possible.
Not even having come up through all the age groups and captain the under 21s.
Probably only my last year of 21s that I really realised that this actually could be a career.
And then you mentioned your senior trials, and I know having spoken to a couple of your teammates, Hannah Martin and Anna Toman, before, it was quite an experience for them. And I guess, how was it for you? Because I imagine coming into the squad not long after Rio, a few of the Olympians I imagine would have been present at your trials. How were they?
Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind. None of the gold medalists from Rio were trialling. They all had that deservedly time off. But some of the other squad from last cycle were in, and that was quite daunting, quite intimidating. But they were all so welcoming, and it didn't feel like a kind of oldies and newbies. Like, they were so welcoming. Obviously everyone was in the same boat at that time, kind of trialling. And it was good that I knew a lot of people trialling because of playing up through the age groups. Like, there were some people that came in and didn't know anybody. But I was lucky enough to know quite a few people there, so that was nice.
And coming into the squads, you then meet some of the Olympians who are still on the team. Had you been around them much before? Was it very much, I'm now training with Maddie Hinch, with Alex Anderson? Wow.
Yeah, it was very much wow. I remember marking Alex for the first time and being like, what is going on? This is just ridiculous. But no, I remember, so Sophie Bray came up to me and was like, hi, I'm Sophie Bray. I was like, I know. I know who you are. But no, obviously they're all absolutely lovely, and it's such a privilege to be able to train alongside them every day.
And now you spend all your time together. I always feel as though that I look at the entire women's squad and it's very much a whole squad. Like, you maybe pair off one or two, but everyone gets on with everyone. Is that how it is?
Yeah, massively. And I think the culture that we build is a massive part of that. Kind of living our vision, values and behaviours every day is such a huge part. And there is a lot about being a team within that. I don't think you could be successful if you didn't get on with people. Obviously, you have your closer friends within the squad, but that's always going to happen in whatever environment. So no, everyone supports each other, and you know that everyone's got each other's back.
And we're going to go back to something you mentioned previously. You mentioned your university experience. So you came through at Exeter University, got 2-1 as alongside playing hockey. You're now studying, doing a master's. How is that balancing, you know, being a professional hockey athlete and still studying?
I really enjoy it. I'm quite, like, one of my strengths is my time management and my organisation. So I think that works quite well. But I really like having something that is completely not hockey. I don't think I could do it every minute of my life being hockey. It's nice to have something that is completely separate. No one at the uni really knows what I do. I just turn up for like one lecture a week and they all hate me because I never attend anything. But I like just being able to sit at a computer and like do an assignment or whatever that is completely separate from hockey.
Are there times though, i.e. exam and essay times, when it can be a little bit stressful? I know you say you time manage well, but it must still be just that, oh, I've got to train and then I've got to go and study. It must be a little bit taxing.
A little bit. Emma Mitchell, so our lifestyle advisor, she is absolutely brilliant. And if you need deadline extensions or whatever, she will send emails to anyone and everyone that needs to have them, just to kind of back you up and say that she is pretty busy. Like, you need to give her a couple more weeks to hand this in. But I've only had one extension so far, so it seems to be going all right.
And am I right in thinking that, as well as, so you did a business management undergrad degree and he's doing business as well, now for your masters, but am I right in thinking you got you graduated with an advanced proficiency in Spanish as well?
Yeah.
So you did that alongside studying for business, was it?
Yeah, so I just did, it was 80% business, and then I just did 20% Spanish modules as well.
So I imagine out in Chile at the Under 21 World Cup, that might have been quite useful.
Yeah, helpful. We were playing Spain last week as well, and I'm not fluent by any means. I could survive in Spain, but it's quite funny. You can often hear them saying things, and you like they're shouting, go left or whatever, and you're like, okay, I'm going to move over there. You get a bit of a head start.
And now, I was going to get you to say something, because you say you're not fluent. I will say the one Spanish phrase I know is, see if you can get it. And I've Google translated it, and it's roughly correct. So, soy seguido por un asno misterioso.
Oh my God, I've actually got no idea. I am, what was it, seguido?
Soy seguido por un asno misterioso.
Asno, something mysterious. No, I've got no idea.
I'm being followed by a mysterious donkey.
Oh, donkey!
Don't ask me why I know that. But
I was going to say.
No. So perhaps just Spanish.
Random, no, not that great.
And another thing, and I'm sure you're going to be asked about this a few times before the World Cup, is the cat cuddling.
Oh,
could you perhaps explain sort of what that is? Because I know Alistair, when I mentioned this to him, he has 5 cats. He was so jealous.
That, really?
So yeah, what's all that about?
So I did this for, I only really did it for the first 6 months of the programme. I've not done it for a year or so now. Basically, when I came into the programme, I wanted something that wasn't hockey to just go and do for a couple of hours a week, but didn't want to take on anything too serious that would like drain me for training and stuff, because it takes you quite a while to settle into training every day. So I was looking at local kind of animal volunteer centres locally, and there's a cattery in Maidenhead called Joe's Folly, and they kind of rent out, I don't know what you call them, pens essentially, to the RSPCA, who just put in their stray cats that they've picked up. And obviously cats get lonely. So a volunteer goes in for 2 hours a day, and literally just, some of them you just, they just want to cuddle. Some of them are feral cats, so you kind of have to actually coax them into liking humans almost, because they will literally just stay away and hiss at you. Some of them kittens who have never interacted with humans before, so you kind of have to get them used to human interaction. But no, it's cool. You just get to play for cats for 2 hours.
And who is it? Obviously, you're there to help the cats, like you say, integrate with humans or be less scared. But who is it more beneficial for, really? Is it beneficial for them or is it beneficial for you?
I mean, I'm going to say it's a bit of both. I was chatting to our psychologist about it, and she was like, there's actually proven studies that obviously interacting with animals can be good for your mental health. And I was like, okay, well, ticks two boxes then.
And we saw, was it puppies outside the games, at the Commonwealth Games? Is that something we're planning on bringing in for this World Cup? We're going to have some cats or some puppies outside.
That would be amazing. And loads of girls in the squad absolutely love dogs. Maddie Hinch is the biggest dog lover I've ever known. But yeah, I do the app Borrow My Doggy, so you just go and walk random people's dogs, which is great.
And it must be quite a nice mental break as well, just to get away from everything and just go and play with an animal.
Yeah, exactly. I love my own dog, but unfortunately our landlord doesn't allow dogs.
And coming back round to the serious stuff, we'll finish when we started with the World Cup coming up in less than 4 weeks now, which is really scary when you say it like that. How are all the preparations going? I know you've had a few practice games. Is everything going according to plan?
Yeah, I think so. We're prepping. We've had more games than I think I've ever had in the programme, which is great because you train in order to play games, don't you? So, no, it's really, really good. Obviously, just getting an understanding of what kind of tactics we'll be playing, scouting out oppositions and kind of working through all our scenario-based things. So in the last quarter, we might get the call that pretend we are 1-1 and we have to win the game. So we'll take our keeper off and then how we'll play with that and play different presses. So that's pretty cool.
And how is the mood within the camp? Is it similar? Are you trying to treat it similar as you were building up to the Commonwealth Games and just treating it like it's another tournament? Or is everyone treating it as, this is special, we're playing at home, let's go out and win this?
I think it is a little bit different because it's a home tournament and there's not many people in the squad that have experienced such a big tournament at home. We had some of the London 2012 Olympians in last week. They came and spoke to us a kind of about a home event, which that was really beneficial for me especially. So we had like Helen Richardson-Walsh, Kate Richardson-Walsh, Hannah McLeod, people like that all came in, and that was massively beneficial. Everyone is massively excited, and I think everyone wants to use the home crowd. Kind of, we recognise all the work that the hockey makers do and that you guys do in the office, and how we can almost use that to our advantage, because we're hoping that hoping that you'll support us.
No, I think we will.
But I think everyone is, yeah, everyone is really excited, and I think people just want to get out there and smash it now.
I was going to say, we have still got 3 and a bit weeks to go, and I know from my perspective, this is all I've been focused on pretty much since I joined back in September. So I know that I now want it to be underway. And is it the same for you guys as well? Or are you still looking forward to having that little bit more preparation time?
I think a bit of both. So we've got 2 more games against Belgium this week. We play Germany next week. And then we play Australia and China in the holding camp, in the build-up to it. So that's still 6 more games. So hopefully by then we will be absolutely ready.
And we've obviously got the Men's Football World Cup going on at the moment. We've got Wimbledon coming up as well. But this is another World Cup to follow on from both of those. It's the biggest sporting event, team sporting event, being held in this country this year. And just how important is it, A, for hockey, and B, for women's sport, this World Cup?
Oh, it's huge. The just amount of tickets that have already been sold. So all of our games have obviously sold out, which is absolutely incredible that there are that many people that want to come and watch women's sport, which I think is a massive step forward. And just hopefully all of the young kids that we can inspire to either start up hockey or keep on playing hockey to the next level. Obviously, one of our visions as a squad is to inspire the future. And I think this is a massive stage to actually do that on. Even just little things like at the end, we'll be around for autographs and in the fan zone and things like that. And just getting to know the fans and getting to know the people that support us is amazing for us. And hopefully we can have some kind of impact on them as well.
And finally, when this has gone out, the squad announcement video will have come out. And I know we spent a lot of time working on that, creating the whole concept of the prize being the fans and literally smashing through stereotypes. And is that something you think this World Cup will do, is that it will elevate hockey and people will now see it as the sport it is, rather than the jolly hockey sticks and that, you know, it's inferior to other things?
Yeah, I think anyone that knows the sport never gives it the stereotype of jolly hockey sticks. You only need to look at Kate Richardson-Walsh in London breaking her jaw and then coming back to play 2 games later. Like, what other sport, apart from maybe rugby? If a footballer did that, they'd be out for the next year or something. But I think, yeah, hopefully we can really show people that it is a really fast, it is a really intense sport. And hopefully people see that. And maybe for those non-hockey players, hopefully they might want to take up hockey in some form.
I think that's the perfect note to end on. Thank you so much, Catherine. I can safely say this has been in my top 3 interviews for this podcast. And we wish you all the very best, and we can't wait to see you out there on the pitch in the World Cup.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Catherine for coming on to our podcast and telling us her story ahead of her World Cup call-up. I'm sure she's going to be very excited once that tournament gets underway, as will a whole other bunch of people. Now, for those of you who follow us on social media, you will know that this episode was supposed to be episode 25, our longer, normal form of episodes, but thanks to some technical hiccups, half of the episode, namely our entire discussion section, was wiped by the program that we use for editing. So it's incredibly frustrating from our point of view, because we thought it was a particularly good one. We talked about sexism at the FIFA World Cup, as well as Wimbledon seeding. So in terms of bringing our thoughts across to you, they will probably end up in written form as articles on our website. So in due course over this week, we'll try and put something up on there so that our work doesn't go entirely to waste. Some final notices as well that we put out on the audio that got wiped. First off, as always, you can follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and on Instagram. All of our handles are Sportspielpod, but the main thing that we wanted to put across is that we've migrated hosts. from SoundCloud to Audioboom, which means we're in more places and we're more accessible on the internet than we've ever been before. Likewise, we've also set up a YouTube account, so our episodes will be on there as well if you prefer to listen that way. And in terms of that, that's it from us this week. We hope to be back next week if we can find some time to meet up and get an interview put together. But after that, because Will will be knee-deep in Hockey World Cup work, we will play it by ear as to how often we get an episode out there. But thanks to everyone for sticking with us through the technical palaver. Hope everyone enjoyed the episode nonetheless. And have fun until we next return.